Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Free Speech, Due Process, and Terrorist Organizations Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On June 21st, 2010, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Holder v. Humanitarian Law Project. The case involved an as-applied challenge to the material support provisions of 18 U.S.C. Section 2239B, which make it a crime to provide support in the form of training, expert advice or assistance, service and personnel to entities designated by the Secretary of State as foreign terrorist organizations. The question was whether, as applied to plaintiffs who wished to provide some of these forms of support to the PKK and Tamil Tigers, the provisions would violate the Due Process Clause of the Fifth Amendment or the First Amendment rights to freedom of speech and association. In a 6-3 opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held that the provisions may constitutionally be applied to the plaintiff's proposed activities. The court reasoned, 1, that the terms training, expert advice or assistance, service, and personnel provide a person of ordinary intelligence fair notice of what is prohibited. 2, that the terms did not include independent political advocacy, but rather required concerted activity with the designated organizations. 3, that the government's interest in combating terrorism is an urgent objective of the highest order. 4, the judgment of Congress and the executive branch that the speech and activities plaintiffs proposed to undertake would assist these groups with a broader strategy of terrorism was reasonable, as this seemed entirely foreseeable. And 5, that Section 2339B does not penalize mere association with these groups, but only prohibits the act of giving material support. To discuss the case, we have Charlotte School of Law professor D. Scott Broyles. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Broyles.
Hello, this is Scott Broyles. I'm a professor at the Charlotte School of Law. I'll be discussing a recent Supreme Court decision. On June 21 of this year, 2010, the Supreme Court in Holder v. Humanitarian Law Project upheld a federal law banning material support for foreign terrorist organizations, and that included advice about entirely legal activities. The Justice Department considers the material support statute to be one of, if not the most effective tool it has to prosecute terrorism because the law is so broad. In fact, it's broad enough to cover a range of activities linked to terrorist organizations, from collecting funds to blowing up buildings. The government has charged some 150 people with its violation, including John Walker Lind, who is also known as the American Taliban. The vote was 6-3, with Chief Justice John Roberts writing for the majority. Justice Stephen Breyer dissented, joined by Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor. Perhaps surprisingly, Justice John Paul Stevens voted with the conservative majority. Interestingly, Solicitor General Elena Kagan represented the government at the Supreme Court oral arguments in February of 2010. The case involved foreign terrorist organizations unfamiliar to most Americans, the Kurdish separatist party known as the PKK, which operates in Iraq and Turkey, and the Liberation Tigers of Tamil Eelam, which fought for an independent state on Sri Lanka until they were crushed by government forces last year. The ban on material support to groups designated as foreign terrorists by the Secretary of State first passed in 1996 and was toughened under the post-9/11 Patriot Act. Currently, material support includes not only money or materiel, but also service, training, and expert advice or assistance. The primary plaintiff in the case is a civil rights activist and college professor who said his intent was to provide such, quote, expert advice in order to instruct the PKK in ways to advance, quote, its lawful nonviolent goals through the peaceful use of international law. He and others asked the federal courts to declare such activity constitutionally protected under the First Amendment. Chief Justice Roberts did not agree with the plaintiffs. While terrorist groups such as Hezbollah and Hamas often conduct both peaceful and violent activities, Justice Roberts wrote, Congress found that they may be so tainted by their criminal conduct that any contribution to such an organization facilitates their conduct. Even arguably peaceful activity like that proposed by the plaintiffs could contribute to terrorism, Justice Roberts maintained, because it frees up other resources for violent ends. This is so because money and resources are essentially considered fungible by terrorist organizations in that they do not maintain organizational firewalls between their social, political, and terrorist operations. The leader of Hezbollah, Hassan Nasrallah, has indicated that this is how his organization does, in fact, treat money and resources. In addition, when organizations such as the Humanitarian Law Project teach terrorist organizations about international law and supposedly peaceful means to accomplish their ends, they might well help lend legitimacy, in the court's words, to terrorist groups, as they could use such knowledge to cover their bloody objectives by appearing other than as they actually are. The First Amendment, according to Justice Roberts, is not violated because U.S. citizens remain perfectly free to advocate for the political aims sought by foreign terrorist groups, so long as those citizens do so independently of those groups. If, however, they coordinate with terrorist groups, they violate the material support statute. When national security and foreign relations questions, such as how to effectively combat terrorism, are before the judicial branch, Justice Roberts also argued, courts should give great weight to the judgments of Congress and the executive branch. Finally, Justice Roberts cautioned, there may be cases where some interaction with foreign terrorist groups could be constitutionally protected. Those more difficult cases, in his words, would have to be addressed if they arose in the future. Justice Breyer, joined by Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor, dissented. Quote, not even the serious and deadly problem of international terrorism can require automatic forfeiture of First Amendment rights, he wrote. In this case, all the activities involve the communication and advocacy of political ideas and lawful means of achieving political ends. Citing a number of Supreme Court cases interpreting the First Amendment, Justice Breyer argued that the amendment protects advocacy even of unlawful action, so long as that advocacy is not directed at inciting imminent lawless action and is actually likely to incite such lawless action. This is traditional First Amendment analysis that Justice Breyer employs. Furthermore, he says there is no such intent or danger in the facts of the case involving the Humanitarian Law Project. Justice Breyer said that it is the government's responsibility to demonstrate that the challenged activities truly advanced international terrorism before First Amendment rights could be restricted, and that the government had simply failed to do that in this case. Justice Breyer offered what he contended was a sounder reading of the material support statute as only banning speech when the defendant knows or intends for his speech to actually assist a terrorist organization's terrorist activities. Now, the Humanitarian Law Project decision may well indicate that the current court will have at least five justices inclined to defer to Congress and the President when it comes to matter involving combating of terrorism. By refusing to engage in a prolonged discussion about prior Supreme Court cases interpreting the First Amendment and free speech rights, Justice Roberts and the majority seem to consider the world of terrorism as an area where traditional free speech analysis will not be strictly applied. Clearly, working with terrorist organizations, even in an apparently benign manner, will not be tolerated if prohibited by law. Certainly, this is true if those claiming abridgment of their free speech rights have other and independent avenues to express their ideas.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.